The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
The words and messages of our prelude this morning, Jess Fishen, really touched my soul. They vividly describe the experience of sharing with a child an activity that's about much more than the activity itself, right? It's about connection, a felt connection between a parent and a child, a connection to a shared moment, a connection from one generation to the next, and therefore a connection of past with present and present with future. And I find these lines in the song especially meaningful to me. I say, "Daddy loves you, baby," one more time. She says, "I know. I think I've got a bite." And all this laughing, crying, smiling, dying here inside's what I call living. And she thinks we're just fishing. Good morning, everyone. I'm Jerry Lazzaro. I chair the worship committee here at the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. Our fellowship is a liberal, welcoming faith community in Collegeville, Pennsylvania, and online at www.tpuuf.org. We are dedicated to exploring new paths to kindness and spirituality, and I'm delighted and honored to lead our congregation in worship this morning as we acknowledge Father's Day 2023. Now, we could be focusing on several significant occasions this morning, couldn't we? We all realize what tomorrow is, right? June 19th, Juneteenth, right? An occasion that's been celebrated in Black communities for over a century and a half, and just last year, President Joe Biden declared a federal holiday, and it's now fully observed with all the accoutrements in 28 states. Anyway, and you know what that celebrates? It celebrates the arrival of federal troops in Galveston, Texas, and the arrival of those troops finally made real the promise of the Emancipation Proclamation issued 2 years earlier by President Abraham Lincoln and 6 months after the acceptance of the 13th Amendment to the Constitution, which abolished slavery in the United States, right? And on June 19th, around 250,000 enslaved people were finally freed from bondage. And we could celebrate the summer solstice, which is occurring this Wednesday, June 21st at 10:57 a.m., right? Okay, good. Jot that down, right? That's the day when you can get an egg to stand, Lorraine, what is it? You get an egg to stand on its head or something? Yes, okay. I've never tried it, but they say it works, right? Aside from the bright prospect of the most hours of daylight this year, the solstice carries existential and spiritual meaning for many of us here, for whom our faith is at least to some extent nature-based and nature-centered. But today just happens to be Father's Day. So we devote our service this morning to appraising, praising, and celebrating an aspect of fatherhood that we haven't directly addressed in recent years. Our Soul Matters theme for the month of June is the paths of delight. And so we take as the theme of worship this morning, delights of fatherhood. Now, a note of clarification here, right? Okay. Nowadays, the word delight tends to refer to a pure, unadulterated, uncomplicated pleasure. All right, fathers, all right, anyone who's ever engaged in fathering would be hard-pressed to say that fathering comes with no delusions and no complications, right? Okay, let's get that out of the way, right? But originally, delight meant something involving a high degree of pleasure or satisfaction. And that, I believe, certainly applies to fathering. I know for myself, I can attest that fathering is the source of some, if not many, of life's most pleasurable, memorable, and satisfying experiences. And many of us here today, including our guest speakers, would echo that sentiment. We'll hear from Mike Berkheimer, John Sayre, and Lorraine Lee later in the service. And they would echo the sentiment expressed in our prelude this morning that fathering is what can make us feel like we're truly living. So on behalf of the TPUP Worship Committee and our fellowship as a whole, I welcome you this morning, especially those who are single, married, widowed, divorced, rich, middle class, poor, LGBTQIA+, or not, those living near or far away, no matter where you were born, what language you speak, your skin color, ethnicity, culture, ability, or disability, we welcome you. We also want you to know that we love crying newborns, active toddlers, kids, youths, adults, and seniors, and people who are thick, thin, short, tall, and in between. We welcome you whether you can sing high or sing low, or you can only sing in the shower, only try to sing, or if you can't carry a tune in a bucket. You will find kindred spirits here. You're welcome if you're a first-time visitor, have been here before, are a member, or if you don't know why, what, who brought you here this morning. You're welcome if you attend worship services weekly, sometimes, rarely, never, or if this is your first time ever. We welcome you if you've been named in a Unitarian Universalist congregation, don't remember if you were, or don't even know what that means. How many of you know what that means? My children were named, that's a long story, right? Okay, we extend a special welcome to if you've been hurt in the past by a church and hope you'll find nothing but love and acceptance here. And please know that we welcome you with all your questions and doubts, beliefs, disbeliefs, and unbeliefs. In short, no matter who you are, where you are on your life's journey, on your spiritual journey, we welcome you, period, as Victor Borge would say. You know, I hope some of you have seen that routine where he decides that in speech, we should have punctuation marks similar to what we have in writing. So this was a period. An exclamation point was, okay, I'll do that. And we invite you to worship with us this morning, beginning with a responsive reading by Lorraine Botthoff McNeil, a member and worship leader of the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Tyler, Texas. It's a tough territory to work in, isn't it? TPUF member Susan Westington will lead us in reading Empowering the Fathers of This World. And your responses are printed in italics and bold on the screen behind me. So please join responsively. Susan?
Today is Father's Day, a day in which we honor and offer gratitude for our fathers. In whatever form or fashion they come into our lives, biological fathers, stepfathers, adoptive and foster fathers, grandfathers, spiritual fathers, and all of the uncles, brothers, and friends, whether they know it or not, have helped to fill the role of father in someone's life.
We are shaped by their presence and their absence, by how they choose to act and when they abstain, and what they say and when they remain silent.
Let us remember today and always the impact that these people have on us as individuals and as a community.
And let us also remember that this relationship is not one-sided, and that we, as a community, are called to support and empower the fathers of this world, no matter how they came into their roles and regardless of their relative successes or failures.
Let us raise up their triumphs, and let us have the grace to forgive them. They're all too human failures. Let us love our fathers and each other.
Come, let us worship together. Thank you, Susan. Okay. Now it's time to light our chalice, as we do every week. The chalice and the flame together form the symbol of our free faith, signifying, among many things, our openness to the wisdom of many ages and many traditions, and our commitment to keep the light of truth, the warmth of compassion, the flame of liberty and justice burning within ourselves and throughout our world. We light our chalice this morning with words by Reverend Peter Friedrichs, who, until he retired from active ministry last year, was the minister of our neighboring church in Media, Pennsylvania, the Unitarian Universalist Church of Delaware County. I hope I can get through this, because there are just too many points of contact here. For sleepless nights awaiting the curfew breakers, for anxious hours as a driving instructor, for hours spent on sidelines cheering and watching school plays, sometimes resting our eyes, for the pressures of breadwinning and wait till your father gets home, for teaching moments and mentoring moments, for making up answers when you really just don't know, but are expected to because you know everything, for scrapes and boo-boo kisses and band-aids, for hugs and kisses and silliness and play, for bedtime stories and early morning ice time, for all the aftershave and ties received as gifts, for handing over car keys, and for waves goodbye, for father-daughter dances, and cradling grandchildren for the first time, for all the moments and all the meaning in the role of a lifetime, we light our chalice for fathers and for fatherhood. And now as we light our peace lamp, please join responsively with the words printed in italics on the screen behind me. May peace be with us. Okay. Thank you, Susan. Now let's sing together our gathering song, hymn number 299, Make Channels for the Streams of Love. This song reminds us that for the gifts of love to flow, we have to create channels for it. And this morning, let it remind us that one of the most life-affirming and life-sustaining channels for love to flow is fathering in its many forms. As we saw earlier, biological fathers, stepfathers, adoptive fathers, and foster fathers, grandchildren, grandfathers, spiritual fathers, and all the uncles, brothers, and friends who, whether they know it or not, have helped to fill the role of father in someone's life. So please sing along. Make channels for the streams of love. We don't always include a moment for all ages in our service, but This morning, as we focus on fathers and fatherhood, and it seems fitting to include an intergenerational element, now I notice we have only one of our youngest participants back there. I don't know if you wanted to come forward, or you can just do it from back there. Brooke, why don't you hang back there? Because this is actually for everyone, and it sort of runs right into our little guided meditation. I was going to ask the children, say, what is something now that you really enjoy? Ah, okay, great, okay. Hey, how are you? I was going to ask, what's something right now you really like doing with your dad? Is there anything?
Playing for zombies,
right? For a lot of kids today, that really is. I know my son and his son, my grandson, on my son's birthday, and what he wanted to do was play video games with his dad. That was what he wanted to do. So you like playing video games with that, right? Anything else? Reading stories? You go on hikes, right? With your dad. Yeah, you enjoy that, don't you? Yeah. That's a great thing to do with a family. Yeah. All right. Okay. Now I want all of us to think about this a little bit. If you can go back in time and think, what is something that you really, really like doing with your dad? And it may have involved other people, the family members, but there was something that, especially with dad, you know, maybe because it was a ball game or something like that, you know, where mom was not exactly into it, right? But dad was, or something like that. So, okay, take a moment here, just take a deep breath, you know, and relax and so forth, and try to go back and think, what's something you really enjoyed doing with your dad? It was something really delightful that you did with your dad. Or someone who provided that father role in your life. I mean, it could have been a granddad, a friend, a teacher, a mentor, or someone that you really enjoyed doing with that person. And try to get back into that moment. And what were the feelings you had at that time? What did it mean to you at that time? What meanings did you experience? Okay, so now you think, as you think back on it, what meaning does it have for you? What feelings does it generate? Now that you've had that perspective of time and many more experiences, what meaning does that time with that father figure mean to you? And what feelings do you now experience as you think back on it, as you recall that memory? Let's try to focus on those for a little bit. And then, whatever your gender or whatever your fatherhood status, parenting status, what could you do in the next day or two to bring those same feelings to bear, to somehow generate that same meaning and that same sense of pleasure, satisfaction, of delight? Specific action, something you could say or do, even maybe today, in reaching out to someone. And if you are fortunate enough to still have that person living on this earth, if you could reach out to that person today, on Father's Day, or maybe in the near future, what could you say to let that person know that you remember that experience and that you remember, that you hold the feelings with you even today? Okay, let's come back to the present here. I mean, my parents, of course, are deceased. My grandparents, my mother's father died 2 years before I was born, and my father's father died 6 months after I was born. So I never really knew either of them. I only know them through the stories told about them, you know? And I just know, for instance, that on my mother's side, that grandfather was just a very kind and generous person. And also, in spite of my grandmother's absolutely insistence on assimilation, you're an American, you act like an American, right? Okay, well, he would speak a little Italian to them and talk to them about Italian culture and history and play opera records. Vinyl records, which of course, as kids are wont to do, you know, they were pretty brittle. Anyone remember those records? And they'd be strewn on the floor. Not a single one survives today, right? And on my father's side, how he was just a very playful individual. And that was part of the whole family thing there. Anyway, and my dad, music. He was never more himself and in his kind of like, how could you put it, adult childhood, as when he was playing the guitar and leading people in singing. He had played professionally, and he was one of the best rhythm guitarists I ever heard. Somebody could start a song, and we're going to, I think what we want to do, though, before I mention, is have the children's recessional. So we can sing you off, right? Are you going to? Go now in peace, go now in peace. May the spirit of love surround you everywhere, everywhere you may go. I was going to say that if people were singing, he would say, that's a bad key for you. And he would simply transpose the song in an instant. Now, I can transpose, but not instantly. And if people started singing and they were all singing in a different key, he'd say, whoa, whoa, let's agree on a key here, right? And they'd say, how about this? And then he would just play the song as effortlessly as I've ever seen anybody do it. And if two bars in, he said, that was too high, he would change it. Or if that was too low, and he'd just change it. Anyway. It's a wonderful memory I have. Anyway. Okay, so in keeping with the observance of Father's Day and this month's Soul Matters theme, Paths of Delight, our message this morning focuses on the delights, the pleasures, and satisfactions of fathering. And we'll hear from three members of our faith community, two dads, one a biological father, one an adoptive father, and a daughter, right? From the daughter's perspective here. And first up, we're going to hear from Mike Berkheimer. And you can put some of the responsibility for this service on his shoulders, because a couple of months ago at the worship committee meeting, when we were deciding what to do on Father's Day, I said, well, I'll lead worship again, as I've done, and we'll make it a shared pulpit. And I said, well, I don't know, because the theme of the month is paths of delight. And I don't know, you know, fatherhood of some kind. Mike says, why do we focus on that? Why don't we focus on the really good things about fathering, you know, the delights of fatherhood? So I said, okay, Mike, you're going to speak that day, right? So I'm going to turn over to Mike Berkheimer.
Well, happy Father's Day to everyone here. A little over 21 years ago, I became a father with the birth of my oldest. Now, my idea of childbirth, I got through television and movies. And I know that television and movies have never lied to me in my life. So I had a certain image of what it was. And I was surprised to find it was not like that at all. Now, I had went to the breastfeeding classes with my wife. I had went to the breathing classes, how to give birth, and all that stuff. But I still had this idea that I would be in the waiting room with a cigar, like from some 1940s movie or something. I don't know, but wasn't like that. And I was surprised too when I got it, when the actual birthing room. I, you know, from the movies, I expected the doctor to be there and everyone to be wearing masks and all this stuff and machines, and none of that was going on. The doctor would pop his head in every now and then and say, "How far along are we?" "So many centimeters." "Okay," and he'd go back out. So my wife and the nurses were doing all the work. And the doctor came in at the very end when my son was about to be born, and he pulled him out, you know, and he asked me to cut the umbilical cord, gave me scissors to cut the umbilical cord. If I've ever felt a moment of religious transcendence, and I don't know that I have, but it was at this moment. Because even though I had the privilege of not actually giving birth, not actually doing the pushing and all the pain and the harm and all that stuff, I was literally shaking. I could not cut the cord. Doctor said, "Here, to a nurse," and she cut it. Now, I have recovered. I recovered enough 2 years later of my daughter. I did cut that cord. But the feeling I had of shaking, which I didn't think I would have, but you see this little, it doesn't look like the movies. You know, movies keep lying to me about this, because whenever they pull a baby out that's just been born in the movies, and you look at it, you're like, "That baby's 6 months old. That's not what it looks like when it comes out, and the head's kind of, you know, and all this stuff." And I suspect this is hardwired into us as mammals, evolution-wise, and perhaps a lot of fathers may know this feeling when that happens, because I didn't think about this, but you think, and I was shaking, I said, "I would die for this thing that I don't even really know, that just came out, that I would jump in front of a train to save it." And that, to me, that was a profound, I'll say, religious experience, that I didn't plan on thinking, and I don't know why I thought it at that moment. But I still feel that with all my children. When I grew up, I came from a very religious background in Philadelphia. The people around me, though, fit into two religious denominations. There were Roman Catholics and there were Jewish people, basically. One of my friends was a secular Reformed Jew, and we were arguing, and his mother said, "Well, we don't believe in heaven," or "I don't believe in heaven." She said, "I believe I live through my children." And that always stuck with me. My one hope for immortality, I believe, is through my children. And I After that, I became very, perhaps a little bit more cynical after the birth of my child, of the three Abrahamic faiths. We're supposed to honor a man named Abraham who would tie down his son and stab him to show his loyalty to God. And I can probably speak for every father in here. If you were told to do that, you would say something else. Or at the very least, I'll go instead of him. Now, the joy, we talk about the joys of fatherhood. Not all joy, of course. I remember, my wife likes littler kids. I liked my kids as they got older. I didn't have to play this dollhouse with my daughter over and over again. The same game where she'd take all the furniture out and we'd have to put each one in individually and stuff. Though I admit, TV lied to me again in saying that like changing diapers would be like the worst thing in the world. It wasn't that bad. It wasn't fun, but I mean, it wasn't like the end of the world. They make it seem like, oh my God. But I enjoy my kids as they're older and more independent. And I get more joy now talking to them like adults. Hopefully passing on the wisdom of the ancients to them. Maybe. And when it's my time to go, I hope what will be said of me as an epithet, you could say, well, he was an educator, he was an author, whatever. But the number one thing that I hope I can earn is beloved father. And I'm sure a lot of fathers in this room feel the same way. Thank you.
Our next speaker is John Sayre. I want to say something. About a month ago, a person who is really an insensitive, ignorant moron made a statement in a congressional hearing, grilling one of the testifiers, they were talking about family issues, and the person was speaking, and this moron said, well, I want to hear from a real mother, because the person speaking was an adoptive mother. And I can't think of a more moronic, insensitive, ignorant statement to make, because making babies doesn't make you a father, right? It's fathering that makes you a father. And we're very privileged to have in our community John and Gail Sayre, who are adoptive parents. And I wanted to hear from the perspective of an adoptive father about the delights of fatherhood. So, John, he left his wizard's booth back there to speak temporarily to us.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, John.
So yeah, if everything goes crazy with all the technical stuff while I'm up here, it's not my fault. Any other time during the service, it is usually my fault, but not while I'm speaking up here. I'm going to try to follow Mike, which is going to be really hard because Mike actually planned out what he was going to say beforehand, and I was feverishly scribbling things down while Jerry was doing his introduction this morning. But, you know, Jerry first asked me to speak a little bit about what it's like to be an adoptive father as part of this service. You know, my first thought was, well, being an adoptive father is no different from being any other kind of father.
Amen.
And it really isn't in a lot of ways. I don't think any father really knows how to be a father. Every father has things that happen that never were in any books or videos or anything at all. I have no idea how people did this in the era before Google and YouTube. It's been a big crutch of mine, and You know, and I've just lived with the thought that, well, you know, therapy can fix anything that I mess up, so it will be all right. And but you know, overall, as an adoptive father, I gotta say it's been a good experience, and it's been what I think of as a normal parenting experience for almost the entire everything. I have known adoptive parents who have had much more difficult fathering experiences. And we were fortunate never to really have that. I've known adoptive fathers whose, you know, kids have hit them with, well, you're not real, my real father, so you can't tell me what to do. Mm. And we never had that at all. So, you know, what I was thinking, as I was thinking about this, I realized that my experience is a little different from most fathers. Most fathers, as Mike said, are participating through the pregnancy and have a little advance notice that there's going to be a baby coming, 8, 9 months in advance. They kind of know it's coming. I guess today most find out boy or girl so they can figure out blue clothes, pink clothes, you know, things like that in advance. We learned that we were going to be parents the night before. So it was a little bit of a surprise. We got a phone call. We had been going through the adoptive process for a while, but nothing had really happened. And we had contacted our adoption attorney in Los Angeles, I think on a Monday, whatever it would have been, June 1st, probably. He called us on Wednesday at noon on June 3rd, and he said, "Can you be in California today?" What do you mean? So, well, there's a baby at the hospital that the mother's wants to put up for adoption, but he's been there for 4 days, and the hospital is going to move him to the county tomorrow. And I said, "There is no way that I can get from Pennsylvania to California today, but we'll be there tomorrow." So we made plane reservations right away. We just literally dropped everything, packed, got on a plane, and flew out. And we got to Los Angeles. We spent an hour getting from the airport in Los Angeles to Beverly Hills to our attorney's office, which is about 2 miles. It was absurd. We met with Matthew's birth mother at his office, and then we went to the hospital. And, you know, we were there at 4 o'clock, and by 6 o'clock we were back at our hotel with a little baby. And thinking, oh God, what did we just do? You know, that was sort of when it suddenly hit us that, you know, okay, we have a baby now. My mother called me on my phone while we were out there. We hadn't told anybody that we were going, that this was happening. She called me and I called her, I guess, and she said, "Oh, good, I'm glad you called because your father wants you to play golf with him on Saturday." I said, "Yeah, that's not going to happen." We're in Los Angeles. "So are you there for business?" "No, we have a baby." So that kind of started the whole process. You know, the interesting thing is we had nothing. You know, the hospital out there was fantastic. They gave us, you know, diapers and formula and carriers and all the things that we needed while we were out there. We had no idea how long we were going to be in California. When you do an open adoption, across state lines, you know, the state of California has to file paperwork, the state of Pennsylvania has to file paperwork, they have to communicate, they have to make all this stuff happen, and that can take, they told us it could take 30 days. We had no idea. They said, we'll let you know when it is. Well, how do you make hotel reservations and figure out plane reservations and things like that for that? So our attorney apparently was pretty well connected, and he was able to make it all happen in 10 days. So, you know, So on Father's Day, 2003, we were on a plane coming home. You know, Mike mentioned that, you know, changing diapers wasn't that bad. Well, changing diapers isn't that bad. Changing diapers in an airplane bathroom, not so much fun. But I'll tell you, the flight attendants gave me, you know, learned a lot of points with the flight attendants for doing that in the bathroom on the plane. You know, that was the beginning of it. And I think the fact that we adopted him at 5 days old really, you know, made the experience a lot easier for all of us, because we were just a family from that point on. There was no, well, I had my previous family and I have this, it was just, this was his family to him. And, you know, growing up was great because I was working from home at that point. You know, the pandemic kind of made lots of people do that, but I was doing that in 2002, 2003. So as he was needed, you know, somebody to play with, I was able to hang out with him and play with him. I didn't have a lot of absolute deadlines for work that I was doing, so I could hang out with him and play all day long. And then I was still able to actually get work done at night without falling asleep, which I do now. I can't do that anymore. But back then, I could do that. I could, you know, adjust my work schedule and my work hours so that I could spend a lot of time with him, and that to me was magical. He's 20 now and just moved into his own apartment at the University of Delaware, and we're trying to figure out where that time all went. You know, it seems like last week we were moving from fourth grade into fifth grade, and, you know, just learning to play the saxophone, and now he's 20 and moved into his own apartment and playing in the marching band at the University of Delaware. So it's been a great experience, really has. I will share, I describe Matthew's, I guess, his teenage years, or maybe from about age 9 to 17, as a series of my "and I lived" moments. He was in Boy Scouts and Cub Scouts first, and in Boy Scouts and Cub Scouts, parents have to go and do everything with the kids. Boy Scouts are allowed to do things without parents, but I joined him on a number of things. You know, when he joined Boy Scouts, they did a lot of camping all year round, and one of the things that they did was winter camping. And a very good friend of ours had three boys who went through Boy Scouts and said, "Oh, you're gonna love winter camping. It's fantastic, you'll love it." I said, "No, I am not doing that. I'm not camping in the snow. There is no way I'm camping in the cold." And I didn't, but I told Matt, you know, once a year, the Boy Scouts are allowed to camp out in Valley Forge Park. They are the only group that is ever allowed to camp out in Valley Forge Park, and they're only allowed to do it one weekend a year. It's President's Weekend that they do it. So I said, that's a pretty special deal. We had gone to that twice as Cub Scouts for the day, and both times it was 60 degrees and sunny. So I thought, this is a pretty good deal. It'll be February, but it's gonna be warm, it'll be fine. So I told him, you know, it's a big deal, I'll go with you for the Valley Forge camp out. That year, it was 17 degrees, blizzard snowstorm, and 40 mile an hour winds. I think the wind chill was somewhere around 8. And we camped out overnight, and it was freezing. I mean, it like you can't believe. And I lived, you know, and a whole lot of other "and I lived" moments through that, and shared experiences that hopefully he'll learn from. Hopefully he'll remember, you know, with a kind thought that I was there. You know, and that's really the thing for me, was the biggest thing was to make him feel like we're always there. Like we were always there with him. You know, we took him with us whenever we went anywhere. We haven't had a lot of anniversary dinners, just the two of us. We always took him with us. And I guess that's maybe, you know, the thing that we just always wanted to have him close by. And now he's an hour and a half away. So he's not too far, But yeah, it has been a great experience so far as a father. And as Mike said, I really do enjoy interacting with him now more on an adult level. I enjoyed it when he was very little. And then the middle years were a little difficult knowing how to relate to a 10, 11, 12 year old. And now I can more relate to him more on an adult level. So I'm really enjoying things today. So thanks.
Thank you, John. Thank you, John. So many of us here have had the privilege of watching Matt grow up in this congregation and of interacting with him in different environments. And one thing, and we're very proud of that, I think, very proud of him. One thing, shouting that Matthew actually is an Eagle Scout. And Preston, Linda, and I were actually at the ceremony when he was given the honor of becoming an Eagle Scout officially. Right. It was a very, very great moment for us, I think. I really enjoyed that. Now, a different perspective here, perspective of a child, of a father. Lorraine Lee, a longstanding member of our fellowship, who's fulfilled many roles here, been on the board how many times, and and on other committees as well. Lorraine's going to speak to us from the perspective of a daughter about the delights.
When Jerry asked me to be part of this service, it was with the understanding that I would talk about my father and perhaps add something to the service about the delights of fatherhood. I agreed to talk about my father, with whom I had a really special relationship. However, once I began to think about this some more, I decided that I wanted to pick out another father from my lifetime, my maternal grandfather, Ernest Pooter. During my childhood, he told me many things and taught me many others, some serious and some amusing. My grandfather was born in Hamburg, Germany, and grew up there. As a young boy, he was apprenticed to a cabinet-making class where he learned carpentry skills, including how to make inlaid wood furniture and cabinets, which was quite a trick for him because his hands were about this big. It was really, you know, interesting. Being apprenticed was a rather stoic existence with all sorts of rules and procedures. Apprentices lived on the premises in boarding school fashion. Once Grandpop told me about the meals. They were the same each day of each week. So on Mondays they had stew, Tuesdays cabbage, and so on. Everyone knew what a particular day's meal would be. If the cook changed, he learned from the others what would be served. This did not change. I suppose that is why my grandfather never ever complained about the food my grandmother prepared, which was tasty. I'm sure he felt as if he was fortunate to have such a good wife. He set an example for us too, as we never complained about the food we got at Grandmom's house. As a young man, Grandpop became a socialist, determined to fight the Nazism he saw developing all around him. He spent his time away from work hanging socialist campaign posters. But soon, he realized he would have to leave his beloved country if he were to remain safe. The great incarceration and extermination was beginning. So he immigrated to America, where he could continue his political views and earn a living. His brother Paul already was in the USA working as a chauffeur. Paul was instrumental in getting Grandpop a job in the RCA Victor cabinet factory in New Jersey. Yeah, in Camden, right. Grandpop sent for my grandmother, and they were married the day she arrived in Philadelphia. They made the newspapers, by the way. They began to eke out a living here, purchasing a wheelwright's shop in Bedminster, Pennsylvania, which is over in Bucks County, and converting it into a woodworking shop. They became well known in Bedminster as honest and hardworking people who stood up for justice when the situation called for it. The shop, as they called it, was a sort of gathering place for the local people of Bedminster. My sister and I spent time in Bedminster during the summer, where we became part of the working household. Grandpa considered it his duty to teach us important things, such as how to properly sweep sawdust from a floor using a broom. I know how to do it, folks. My sister also was part of a small production line at the shop where chair frames for upholstered furniture were made. My younger cousin and I escaped this as we were too young to help, according to Grandpa. We were left on our own to find things to amuse us. One was to play on the swing set Grandpa had made for us. We loved to swing high and make the swing frame jump. Lots of fun. We also had a ring set and a trapeze bar. This made it possible for me to excel in high school phys ed class when it was apparatus season. Thanks to Grandpa, I already knew what to do. Some of the things I remember about my grandpa are his deep respect for education. He always encouraged me to get my education. Thinking about it now, I can say that he was an influence for me to work on my doctor's degree. He had such great respect for educated people and was, in fact, a scholar himself. He always was reading, mostly political, but other things as well. My aunt, his second daughter, brought him racy novels to read when he was in his twilight years and very frail. He enjoyed those books. He also enjoyed his Carstairs whiskey, which my sister brought to him unbeknownst to our grandmother, who would have disapproved. Eileen brought the whiskey in her diaper bag and placed it by Grandpa's chair. My job was to distract Grandmom so the surreptitious pass could be made. We did this all the time. A late memory of Grandpa was him sitting in his favorite chair with tennis balls at his side. He would toss those balls to our children, his great-grandchildren. He couldn't get out of the chair. He was an invalid at that point, but he could play with his great-grandchildren. They loved him dearly, and he loved them. As I look back, I am so happy to have had Grandpa in my life. He taught me to be proud, brave, principled, fun-loving, hard-working, and a loyal and proud family member. Who could ask for more?
Oh my, just so much to process in those statements, and so many points when I'm thinking, oh my gosh, yes, I know exactly what he's talking about. And when my son was born, I had said I would call certain people immediately. He was born in the middle of the night. So I waited until 6 a.m, and I called one of my professors at college, Dr. Wing, who had said, oh, please tell me when. And so I went, I'd been up all night, and I went to a little restaurant. I was getting breakfast. I said, I better call Dr. Wing. So I got on the phone, and I called, and I said, Julia, it's a son. And she said, who is this? Now, if anybody would have known my voice was her, she actually taught voice and articulation, and I assisted her in the class. And she was the director of Reader's Theater, which I was a member of, right? But she said, your voice is an octave above its usual range. I guess I was that excited. Birth of child. Anyway, it's time in our service to open the mic to those of us who are experiencing a joy, lifting our spirits up, or a sorrow or concern weighing our spirit down. to share that with us, if they choose to do so, in the segment we call Matters of the Heart. We'll have a brief musical interlude, an instrumental playing of the theme from Luther Vandross's song, Dance with My Father, which if you ever get a chance, you can, it's a wonderfully, wonderfully beautiful song. And then just how to participate.
Spirit of life, come unto me, sing in my heart all the stirrings of compassion, blow in the wind, rise in the sea.
Yes. Apparently, the chalice has decided to extinguish itself today. Susan was going to assist with this, right? We extinguish our chalice now, but not its light. And on this Father's Day, we embrace the light of memory, the light that illumines our past and connects us in a complex matrix with those who gave us life, and if we were fortunate enough, who blessed our lives with their presence, their wisdom, their guidance, their love. In our relationships, may we carry forward that light and share it deliberately, unconsciously, with all those whose lives we touch and whose lives touch our own. And we can extinguish the peace lamp. And now our closing song this morning is hymn number 434, one of my favorites in all of the hymnals that we have, though I speak with bravest fire, though I may speak with bravest fire. It's a setting of an American folk tune with words that paraphrase the biblical passages in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verses 1 to 3. The words remind us that we experience greatest meaning, pleasure, and satisfaction in what we do, including fathering or mothering or grandfathering or grandmothering or whatever, when our actions are inspired and motivated by love. Michael Tacy, a musician, composer, teacher, and the founder of a foundation that promotes the healing power of music, will lead us in singing, though I may speak
with bravest fire. Please join in. The words are in the video. Minister of the Unitarian Universalist Meeting of South Berkshire, Massachusetts. On Father's Day, we honor those people who have been teachers, confidants, and friends. We acknowledge that it is not biology that makes a parent, but love and attention. For those of us that have lost a father or a child, we hold their memories in our hearts. For all of us who are fathers, we ask for continued help in discerning how best to care for our children, whether they are 5 or 50 years old. May the strands of relationship between ourselves and all of creation grow ever stronger. May all of us, no matter what our place in the cycle of life, experience nurture and love. And may we pass on that love to those we encounter on our own paths. So may it be, and amen. So please stay with us if you can for announcements and for the delightful postlude, the best day of my life. And Lindy, I believe, is delivering announcements this morning.